Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape our community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Ari Shapiro has been one of the hosts of NPR's All Things Considered since 2015. Before that and throughout his career, he was also NPR's Justice, White House, and International Correspondent. Outside of his award-winning work on air, Shapiro also wrote a memoir, performs as a singer, and has a cabaret show with Tony Award winner Alan Cumming. Clearly, Shapiro likes to stay busy, so when he's not in the host chair, he's out reporting in the field, which is what recently brought him to Milwaukee to speak with Wisconsinites ahead of the presidential election. You can hear it this week on All Things Considered, as part of NPR's Where Voters Are project. Ahead of that, he took some time to sit down with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski to talk about journalism and his interests outside of work.
Ari Shapiro, welcome to Lake Effect.
It's so nice to be here in Milwaukee. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Milwaukee to start. And just so our listeners know, why you're here in the Lake Effect studio, what brings you to Milwaukee?
Well, NPR is doing this project called Where Voters Are, where the hosts of Morning Edition and All Things Considered are each going to one swing state. And so you've already heard Mary Louise Kelly in Georgia, and you've heard A. Martinez in Nevada. And I had the great good fortune of getting to come to Wisconsin for a week. So I'm talking to as many voters and people as we can, voters and people, not only voters, but voters and also people, about how they're feeling about this election, what's important to them, what might make a difference, and finding out how the campaigns are strategizing in the state that could determine who controls the White House.
Right. Did you all pull states out of a hat?
We drew straws. I won't say which state was the long straw and which state was the short straw. No, I love the Great Lakes region. I've done a lot of reporting trips to Ohio and to Michigan over the years. I haven't spent as much time in Wisconsin. I've been to the state a number of times, but I haven't done as much reporting here. So I'm really looking forward to digging deep and spending a week getting to know people.
Well, we're very happy to have you here. And this project is something that you're doing outside of your hosting role that many listeners might know you primarily for. So can you share some behind-the-scenes insights of being an All Things Considered host? And from the interviews you get to do, the debriefs, do you get to pick and choose what you get? And when are you given opportunities like this to do projects outside of the host chair?
Yeah, it's a mix. So we have four weekday hosts of All Things Considered. In addition to myself, there's Juana Summers, Mary Louise Kelly, and Elsa Chang, who's based at NPR West. And then, of course, Scott Detrow is the host on the weekends. And the nice thing about that is because two of us host the radio show each week. Generally, in a given month, I will be hosting the radio show for 2 weeks. I'll be hosting the podcast, Consider This, for 1 week. And I'll have an assignment week for like 1 week a month, which is what this is for me. So I am spending this week not hosting the radio show or the podcast, but I'm on assignment reporting in Wisconsin, doing stories that will air on the radio show and the podcast. On a day that I am hosting the radio show, we have an editorial meeting at 9:30 each morning where everybody on staff sits around the table, from the most junior people to the executive producer, and we look at what's already on the board for that day. So we might see, oh, our White House correspondent is bringing us a story about whatever the president is doing. We have a story from Israel about the war in Gaza, et cetera. And then we go around the table and talk about what else we think should be on the show. And so, for example, one recent conversation was about the scandal surrounding the Republican candidate for governor in North Carolina and how that might impact the presidential race. And as we think about the swing states that could decide this presidential election, should we be paying more attention to North Carolina? And we have those discussions, and that helps shape the program every day. We also look at the board and think, how much domestic news is there? How much foreign news is there? Where is the joy, the surprise, the uplift? What's the balance of longer pieces to shorter pieces? How do we mix it up to make sure we don't only have politics and war, but also arts, sports, business, science, and all the other things that make it All Things Considered?
Absolutely. So before I ask about more of the things you've done at NPR, I'm going to throw it way back. What did you do before NPR, and what inspired you to get into radio?
Well, before NPR, I was in college. I got an internship right after I finished my undergrad degree and have really never left NPR. But I grew up as a backseat listener. It was on in my house.
Yeah.
It, like driving around in the car as a kid, it was always on. I used to joke that the All Things Considered theme music gave me a Pavlovian reaction because my mother was always cooking dinner when All Things Considered came on. So, like, I associated ATC's theme with eating. And now I hear it every day, you know, every hour, which is a problem when you have to actually be on the radio and not salivating. But I've always loved the storytelling aspect of it. I love pursuing my curiosity. I love that every day I wake up knowing that I will learn about something over the course of the day that I didn't know about, that I get to ask people who are doing the most important work in their field, whatever that field might be, questions that might be totally basic and ignorant, and I just get to learn what they know, and that's a fringe benefit of my job. I just feel very lucky to get to do that.
I know. I can genuinely tell people when they ask about the job, it's like I really do learn something new every day.
Completely.
Could be minor fact, could be a random thing I'll never use, or could be a big consequential
totally.
Thing.
I'm learning so much about Wisconsin right now.
Yeah. And growing up on NPR, you know, when you were thinking about like, oh, is this a career path I could take? Was there a particular story or journalist that stood out to you that kind of planted that first seed of possibility?
Well, my internship was with Nina Totenberg, who is such a legend. She has been NPR's legal affairs correspondent since many, many years. She started at NPR in the 1970s. And among the many things that I appreciated about Nina is that she got her start in journalism at a time that there was not an obvious place for people like her in journalism. Women were not hired to do hard news. And NPR in its early days hired people like the late Cokie Roberts, like Linda Wertheimer, like, you know, people like Mara Liasson found a home for the kind of hard news reporting that they wanted to do when the main networks were not hiring women to do hard news. And so I look up to those people because they sort of shaped the journalism field to make space for themselves in a way that I think I and others who have come after me have also continued to do. And journalism is not static. Journalism evolves, and we can help shape it through the work that we do.
As you mentioned, your first internship was with Nina, who, according to your book, was a celebrity on par with Meryl Streep in your household growing up.
Yes, it's true. When Nina called my house to talk to me and my mother picked up the phone.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, she recognized the voice immediately.
Yeah.
Sort of freaked out a little bit. Absolutely. Yeah, Nina was a big celeb. Getting to work with her, getting to talk to her, getting to this day to be friends with her and consider her a mentor is just a wild privilege.
Did you click right away? What were you feeling that first day?
It was such an overwhelming time because I had never been to Washington, D.C. before. And this was the beginning of 2001, January 2001. The Clinton administration was ending. The Bush administration was coming in. Nina would take me as her plus one to all of these events, celebrating the outgoing cabinet member from the Bush administration or the incoming official from the Clinton administration. So I was going with her to the Kennedy Center and the Supreme Court, to all these fancy events. Being this kid just out of college who had never met a senator or a Supreme Court justice, it was overwhelming, but it was also just kind of a Cinderella experience.
After your internship with Nina, you did a production job for Morning Edition from 1 a.m. to 9 a.m., I assume drinking coffee for 8 hours straight.
That was when I started my daily coffee addiction.
There you go.
I have coffee in front of me right now, as a matter of fact.
Courtesy of Colectivo, one of the best ones here. And with this production job for Morning Edition, you also started doing reporting on the side as a freelancer, and you did a lot of food stories. And I love a food story. So what's your favorite thing about reporting on all the people and the things, ingredients, everything that revolves around food?
Here's the thing about food. No matter where you are in history, where you are in the world, where you are in the spectrum of wealth, class, any variable, does not matter, food is there. And so by looking at the world through the lens of food, you can tell stories about things that might feel distant and unrelatable that become more accessible because everybody can relate to and enjoy and share food. So telling a story about whether it's MREs, meals ready to eat on the battlefield in a war zone, or a black tie state dinner for a visiting world leader at the White House, offer ways of telling stories through the lens of food that might otherwise make people's eyes glaze over.
Yeah. And you've covered a wide range of topics, you know, included in a wide, wide spectrum. You've had different titles at NPR, such as Justice Correspondent, there's White House Correspondent, International Correspondent, where you're based in London. Mm-hmm. Throughout all these roles, what was your guiding principle that centers your reporting, no matter the topic or beat you're on?
Whatever I'm reporting on, I want to be surprised. I want somebody to say something that I didn't expect. If I go out to report a story and I come back with exactly what I thought I would find, then I've done something wrong. I'll give you an example. I did a story several months ago on a wind farm coming to a coal town in West Virginia. And the story that I set out to tell was about coal workers finding clean energy jobs as the coal economy tanks. Well, I learned that I was completely wrong about two things. The first thing is that coal jobs in West Virginia and in the United States generally had tanked a long time ago. First, when automation came to the coal industry many decades ago in the 20th century, and then when fracking lowered the price of coal in the 21st century. So by the time wind came on the scene, coal jobs were already a tiny fraction of what they once were. That was the first thing that I realized I was wrong about. The second thing I realized I was wrong about is that wind turbines require far less human labor than coal mines do. And so the idea that people would go from working in the coal mines to working on the wind farm was just wrong, because a small handful of people were needed to work on the wind farm. There were some who used to work in coal, but the vast majority of people who used to work in coal were not being hired in clean energy. And that wasn't an experience of, oh, well, I got the story wrong, better not do it. It was an experience of going out and reporting and learning and letting that learning experience inform the story you're telling. And that's what I try to do no matter what I'm covering, whatever the story is, whatever the beat or the job title might be.
Well, and that learning experience plus curiosity go hand in hand.
Totally. Yeah. And being open to being wrong, being open to realizing that your preconceived notions and the ideas that you went in with don't fit the existing reality.
Now, when we prep for interviews, there's a range of things we figure the guests can say, maybe not say, what will we have to dig out or anything like that. Who or what, in your opinion, is the most intimidating kind of guest?
At this point, having been host of All Things Considered for nearly a decade, I no longer really get scared to interview people the way that I used to, but I think it can be really challenging to interview people who are so used to delivering their talking points that it's hard to get them to say anything new. And that can be either a movie star who is doing a circuit for their new blockbuster film, or it can be a senator who's on a campaign where they've been giving the same stump speech for months. In both of those situations, I go into it thinking, how can I get something real out of this? How can I get something that will be of value to listeners? How can I ask a question that's not a gotcha question, but something that will not just be a repetition of the same canned things this person has been saying over and over again? So that's the challenge. I don't know if intimidating is the right word, but that's the thing that I kind of stay up thinking about.
Yeah. And on the other end of the spectrum, do you recall, you know, and this can be intern days, early years, whatever you like, a moment where you had a learning curve with yourself or just being awkward, trying to figure out, like, how do I figure out this dynamic of interviewer, interviewee?
There are so, so many. Look, the thing that I always remind myself of in those situations is that as the interviewer, I have total power.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, especially if it's not live, I can scrap it, I can cut it. Like, the person is trusting me with their stories, with their experience, and so whatever I might do to step in it and screw up and embarrass myself, ultimately, I can compensate for. And the guest doesn't have that luxury and doesn't have that privilege. And so that's the inner monologue that I give myself to try to hit the reset button when I realize I'm doing a terrible job and embarrassing myself, which happens more often than you would know on the radio.
Well, because they hear the finished product.
Like, exactly. Yeah. If listening to the radio, people would think we all sound perfect because we're edited to sound way better than we are.
Right, right. They don't know the hours we spent whittling something down.
Exactly.
Now, from reporting on 9/11 and the aftermath to war zones to shootings in the U.S., a pandemic, constant change, you know, every day is different. Mm-hmm. Have you figured out?
From your description, every day sounds like misery.
Right. Well, and
know,
it kind of
mass shootings, natural disasters,
yeah.
Wars. Yeah.
Well, it leads into the question, like, have you figured out self-care as a journalist? I asked Sylvia Pagioli this, and she didn't have an answer.
Oh,
and I'm like, if Sylvia doesn't,
yeah.
I'm curious what your methodology is.
Well, there are two things I would say. One is about self-care, but the other is about resilience and optimism, which is that talking to people in those situations and seeing their faith in humanity and their insistence on helping people around them gives me faith in humanity and makes me feel more strongly than ever that I can't be pessimistic and just give up on humankind, because people who have so much less power and privilege than I do have not given up. And so what right do I have to say it's not worth it? You know, there's no hope. In terms of self-care, I, not to brag, but I think I have a very good work-life balance. I have two dogs, I have a husband, I have a garden, I do yoga. There's a lot that I do that is not work, and I think I'm pretty good at leaving my work at work. And I also have these side gigs that are really fun. The actor Alan Cumming and I have a cabaret show that we tour all over the place. I sing with a band called Pink Martini. I made a reality TV show for Netflix that I hosted called The Mole. And so life is more than journalism. Life is more than reporting the news. I really enjoy my job as a journalist, but I also enjoy that I get to do a lot of other things too.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to, like, curious about the hosting role specifically, right? It's obviously a change when you're used to being just a reporter out in the field and becoming host of ATC in 2015. What habits do you have in your life that you think help you as a host? You know, say reading a lot or any other kinds of things.
One thing is just being good at juggling short, medium, and long-term projects. Because as a reporter, I had a much smaller number of things on my plate at any given time. And as a host, I'm juggling so many plates. Which leads into the other thing, which is that as a host, you are so dependent on a huge team of people. Any given day, on All Things Considered, my fingerprints might be on 10 different things, and maybe three of those have had my full, undivided, focused attention. And three of those I've paid a little bit of attention to in collaboration with others, and a handful of them I'm just jumping and trusting that there's a net there because the producers and editors and bookers have done all of the work, and I'm just the voice. As a reporter, that's not the case.
Right.
As a reporter, you can be more of a perfectionist. You are more of a solo operator, although not entirely. Obviously, there are editors and so on. But as a host of All Things Considered, I really had to adapt to trusting the team that I work with and knowing that it was okay for me not to give everything my undivided attention because it's just not humanly possible.
Right. Was that something that surprised you? Like, did you have any misconceptions going into the host role after being used to reporting for so long?
I think anyone who becomes a host has some control freak qualities within them. And I'm not as big a control freak as I might be, but I'm certainly more on that scale than not. So being able to let go and learning how to trust that other people would take care of it was a learning curve for me and continues to be after almost 10 years.
With being a voice throughout NPR, I feel like, and you share if you have the same perception as me, but in the past decade or so, I feel like there's been a shift where a journalist's voice has been more encouraged to not just be present, but incorporated into stories. And, you know, when I first started, it was more like, hey, you're a neutral facilitator. You don't have a personality. You don't have opinions. How have you observed this change? Do you think that's true?
I think you're absolutely right. When I started in journalism, there was a kind of view from nowhere, I say in air quotes, aspirational quality to who you are doesn't matter because you're just a journalist with a capital J. But the truth is there has never actually been a view from nowhere. There has been a view from the perspective of the sort of bland majority, which, if we're just going to put our finger on it, is straight, white, you know, Christian, et cetera.
Yep.
And what I think we as journalists and as a country have realized in the last decade or so is that people of color have experience reporting on police violence that can be valuable. Women have experience that can inform their reporting on reproductive rights that is valuable. And so I tell a story in my book about in 2004, my college boyfriend and I wanted to get married, and it was in the early days of same-sex marriage, and I felt like I was somehow going to lose my journalism card if I went out and got married because it was a key part of the culture wars. And I realized, as time goes on, that my experience as a queer person actually helps my reporting and that it isn't something I have to stuff into a box or pretend doesn't exist. I've never been closeted as a journalist. I've been out my whole adult life. But I think that which makes us who we are actually makes us more interesting as journalists. And it's something we can bring to our reporting rather than trying to pretend that you and I are exactly the same and have the same experiences and will report stories in the same way. It's okay if we report stories in a different way. And that does not mean that we abandon the pursuit of objectivity and that we become partisans and that we become advocates. I still think as journalists, we need to strive to listen and hear all voices and represent different points of view accurately and in a nuanced way. But I think that doesn't mean leaving who we are at the door.
That was NPR All Things Considered host Ari Shapiro with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski. There's more to their conversation, including a lightning round of questions, and you can find that at WUWM.com. Be sure to tune in to All Things Considered this week to hear Shapiro's work in Wisconsin. It's featured in the Where Voters Are project, and it's co-reported with WUWM's Mayan Silver.
You can find more interviews like this one by visiting WUWM.com/Lake Effect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.